Well, it's my great pleasure, of course, especially an old radio hand like yourself. Megan, before we get to the Vancouver Island Speaks Out event in Nanaimo Sunday, who and what is Feminist Current?
I started Feminist Current in 2012. I had been actually working with a feminist collective doing a radio show at a Vancouver Co-op radio back in around, I guess, 2010, 2011. And I was unceremoniously ousted from the collective and the radio show over the trans issue, actually, the trans debate, which I was trying to engage with. And my co-hosts chickened out, and I did not want to chicken out of the debate back then. So back in around 2010, and long before that, in fact, this was sort of just when I was getting engaged, radical feminists were really the only one having these conversations around transgenderism and the potential impact on women and women's rights. And there, a number of feminists had been speaking out against the idea of transgenderism and the kind of ideology behind that. So this insistence that a man could become a woman or even live as a woman, that a man who identified as a woman should be taken as an actual female. Now, of course, we're talking about in a legal context. At that time, it was still just social context, but nonetheless, women were protective of their spaces, and feminists in particular were protective of their groups and their spaces, their women-only spaces. It became contentious in Vancouver in any case. The reason that I first heard about this issue was because there was this group, the Vancouver Rape Relief Women's Shelter and Rape Crisis Line. So this was a long-standing transition house for women escaping domestic violence. And this organization has been around for decades and decades. They train women to counsel victims of rape and domestic violence and to help the women in the house as counselors. And at some point, a male named Kimberly Nixon showed up at a training session for counselors, and the women in the collective at the Vancouver Rape Relief Collective recognized that he was a man and told him that he wasn't welcome, that only women were allowed in the house and only women were allowed to train as counselors, and he took them to court. So for years and years and years and years, this transition house, rape crisis line, women's organization that aimed to help, extremely marginalized women in very dangerous situations to escape and heal from extreme violence, were forced to fight for their right to continue to do so in a woman-only space. And these were women that I was working with and allied with and had been supporting and interviewing through my work. And I was just livid. And that's how I got involved in the debate. And the Vancouver Rape Relief was tarred as transphobic ever since that happened, which was actually at the end of the 90s. And they were constantly being attacked by activists. They've lost thousands, tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of dollars in grants and funding over the years from the city, from unions, because of their woman-only policy. And I just found it disgusting. But I mean, in any case, I was ousted from the collective over this debate because I wanted to cover it in a fair way. We were interviewing, both sides of this issue, and my co-host chickened out, and I was ousted from the collective. So I started my own website, feministcurrent.com, so that we could talk about these things. And that was really the only place in Canada that that conversation was happening for many years on my website.
And what was the grounds of why is just speaking or bringing up the topic so threatening?
So we'd done a bunch of work to prep for, we were preparing a show covering this issue, or a few shows, I suppose. And again, had interviewed trans activists and trans identified males working in academia. And then we'd interviewed Lee Lakeman, who is with Vancouver Rape Collective. I'd interviewed another radical feminist. And at sort of the last minute, the collective members got cold feet and wanted to pull the entire, all of these shows and pull all of the interviews. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't think it was fair to the interviewees, but I also didn't want to chicken out of covering this debate. I wanted to get into it. So we had an argument about that. And then I was essentially just locked out of all the accounts and nobody would speak to me about it anymore. So I didn't really get a reason per se.
Well, now I can relate to that. Well, let's talk a little bit about October 1st then. And again, it's the Vancouver Island Speaks Out Gender Identity Ideology, Women's Spaces, and Parental Rights. How are parental rights being affected by what you described as a gender identity ideology?
So in this context, what parents are concerned about is what their kids are being taught and exposed to at school, which if I were a parent, I would be livid. So SOGI, as it's called, was introduced in Alberta and BC around the same time that Bill C-16 passed in 2017, which is Canada's gender identity legislation, which incorporated gender identity and gender expression into the Human Rights Code and the Criminal Code as grounds for discrimination. And SOGI was introduced into all public schools. And
that's sexual orientation and gender identity, the
correct.
Acronym.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, thanks. And what it does is it teaches gender identity ideology. So it teaches kids that you can be born a boy, but you can actually be a girl. You can have been born into the wrong body, that everybody has a gender identity. Kids are asked to share their pronouns in the classroom. Teachers are suggested to look for clues and teach their students to look for clues that, you know, a boy might actually be a girl because, you know, maybe he plays with dolls or he likes dresses. So maybe he's not really a boy. Maybe he's really a girl. And I mean, it's not only nonsense and really confusing for kids, of course, but it's dangerous because statistics do show that once kids start down the path of social transition, so identifying as the opposite sex, once they get to the puberty blockers stage, which of course is intended to prevent kids from going through puberty, supposedly so that they can decide whether or not they want to go full on into medical transition, they usually do continue to medical transition. So they continue on to take cross-sex hormones and eventually have some form of surgery. And it destroys their bodies for their entire lives. All of it does. You know, none of it is fully reversible, not even the puberty blockers. It has an enormous impact on health, and it essentially will render a child sterile as an adult.
Well, geez, when I was in school, it was sex education was the big controversy, just teaching children 11 and 12 years old about condom use and sexually transmitted diseases in a school setting, and that created rancor in certain communities, usually church communities. Are you finding that those are your allies in this fight as well?
I think some of those people are my allies in this fight. Most people that I know who are upset about this are just like regular people. I think that what's happened is that the government, Justin Trudeau's Liberal government, as well as our provincial governments, in this case, I'm in BC, you're in BC, the NDP, and the Canadian media and our institutions, the school boards, the unions, they're presenting what really is a minority position, which is this activist view that you are what you identify as. If a man says he's a woman, and therefore he's allowed access to women's spaces, including change rooms, including women's prisons, including women's transition houses and shelters and bathrooms. That's not a majority view. Most normal people don't believe it's possible to change sex. They don't believe that a male can literally become female. And so definitely there's some, you know, there's a lot of Muslims who are opposed to SOGI. I think that, in fact, the 1 million March for Children was founded by a Muslim man. So Muslims have great concerns about this. I'm sure there's plenty of Christians who have concerns about this. I'm sure there's also plenty of Christians who are going along with it. in general, I think it's just regular people who are seeing what's going on and are concerned about their kids and are concerned about, you know, the impacts both on kids as well as women, and also, you know, the suppression of free speech, the silencing of dissent, the fact that we can't even talk about this. I mean, it's crazy. I've been doing this for some time, longer than most, and it's a struggle just to have a conversation. We have to fight just to have a venue. The first ever event that we held in Vancouver to discuss gender identity and women's rights, that was a talk that was organized on my behalf by some local women. We secured the Vancouver Public Library, and they tried to force us out, and we had to hire a lawyer so that we could keep our venue and go through with our event. And this was literally, you know, I invited a couple of other women, including Lee Lakeman from Vancouver Rape Relief, including an Indigenous women's activist, Faye Blaney, to come and speak with me on the panel. There was nothing transphobic. There was no anti-trans rhetoric. You know, I am opposed to the idea of transgenderism, and I do think that it's nonsensical and ridiculous and harmful. But we were talking about women's rights, and we were talking about why women's rights and women's spaces matter. And that shouldn't be controversial to say that a woman is an adult human female, and that some spaces need to be reserved for women and girls, because some spaces are spaces where women are vulnerable and girls are vulnerable to predatorial men. You know, so many events that we've tried to plan, the venues have pulled out last minute on account of like really, really serious harassment from activists, really violent threats, including Simon Fraser University. We had an event planned for Simon Fraser University in 2019, and they were threatened to such an extent that the security team at Simon Fraser University felt that they couldn't keep staff at the university safe. So we lost our venue about 3 days before the event. We always have to hire private security. I have to have bodyguards. It's scary and it's crazy. You know, I left Canada in part because I feared I would be criminalized for my speech. I thought, I can't work here. All of my work is essentially critical of the Liberal Party and Justin Trudeau's government. He was, at the time I left, which was about 2.5 years ago during COVID, trying to push through these online censorship bills, these online hate speech bills. He did, of course, push through one of his bills regulating what Canadians can see on the internet. So, you know, my work is already shadow banned online. But I saw things getting much worse, and it's really scary for people who are living here to feel like they have these really serious concerns and they cannot be heard. Their political representatives will not listen. And then in public, they frame them as bigots and racists and, you know, transphobes and as Nazis. It's just a really repulsive situation we're in.
Yeah, Canada and Nazis, that's a whole new page. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Megan Murphy. She's a Mexico-based Canadian writer and founder of Feminist Current. She is to the host of Same Drugs, the Same Drugs podcast. You can also find her work online at meganmurphy.ca. We're talking ostensibly around an event coming up in Nanaimo, Sunday coming, October 1st, called the Vancouver Island Speaks Out, Gender Identity, Ideology, Women's Spaces, and Parental Rights. You were down, Megan, in Victoria last week. Tell me about the experience here in my city.
The situation that happened in Victoria was really disappointing and really frustrating and scary. So, of course, across Canada, these 1 million march, it was a 1 million march for children is what it was called, and they happened all across Canada in every province, in numerous cities and towns. There was one I think the biggest one was in Ottawa. I was told there were about 5,000 people who rallied there. They happened in Toronto, in Montreal, in Vancouver, in Nanaimo, in St. John, and of course in Victoria. And the rallies everywhere in Canada went really well. The marches went really well, except for in Victoria. So the police in Victoria, I was told by our security team, had committed to keeping the protesters in a separate area so that the people coming to this rally could listen to the speakers peacefully, and have their march peacefully. The police did not keep the protesters away from the rally attendees. They didn't even try. So the activists got closer and closer and pushed their way to the front and began pushing through and trying to, essentially attack the speakers on the stage. So we had one speaker, Serena Winterburn. She was the MC, and she's a local Indigenous woman, and she spoke. The crowds were getting louder and louder and more aggressive. They were pushing people around, including women and their children, including elders. And I took the stage, and activists were darting at the stage. One of them, I'm told, cold clocked one of the cops in the head, and she was tackled, and the event was shut down. So I was halfway through my talk. And the cops demanded the mic be cut. They said it was too dangerous. They couldn't keep people safe. And so we didn't, we had four more speakers to go. They didn't get to speak, and the march didn't happen at all. And again, that's the only place in Canada where that happened. So I was really angry at how the police handled this. They were underprepared, and they did not even attempt to prevent a violent situation from happening, which I sort of suspect was intentional. They seemed all too glad to escort me away and to shut down the event, honestly.
Well, in Nanaimo, on the same day, there was arrests and altercations as well, and arrests were made. The issue, when I first started hearing about this issue, was some years ago at the University of Victoria, where turf signs started showing up, TERF. Do you want to talk about turfs and what that term means?
Yeah, I mean, TERF is funny because what it actually stands for is trans exclusionary radical feminist, but it's applied now to pretty much anyone who doesn't support gender identity ideology, anyone who says, for example, that, men cannot become women, anyone who wants to protect women's sports and who says, men or males have an unfair advantage, so they cannot compete as girls or women. Anyone who says that males should not be able to access female bathrooms and change rooms, those people are all called TERFs, and I just don't think there's that many radical feminists in the world. So, but originally it was for, I've never identified as a radical feminist, but my work as a feminist was always rooted in radical feminism and sort of the more second wave or even first wave feminism. My work was always critical of third wave feminism, so modern feminism, which I don't consider to be feminism at all. I consider it to be a backlash against the women's movement. But yeah, we were, I worked with a lot of radical feminists, and these were the women who were saying no. These were the only women who were saying no. This is not, no, you cannot become a woman. You're not a woman. These are our spaces. They were the only people, fighting to protect women-only spaces. So that's where that acronym came from. But as I said, it's just applied to anyone who doesn't go along now.
What about this idea of safety? I mean, is there a common ground where there can be a joining of hands on either side of this, where, everybody wants to be safe regardless of what their ideology is?
Well, the other side, the trans activists are safe. They're protected by the police. They're protected by the government. They're protected by our institutions. They're protected by corporations. Everyone, with any power, every organization with power and money is on the side of trans activists. This is not a grassroots movement. Transgenderism was invented by billionaire men like Martine Rothblatt. who have, you know, big pharma money and who want to identify as women and are invested in transhumanism. Isn't that a conspiracy theory I've written about where all this money comes from and where these ideas began on my website? A woman named Jennifer Billick has written about this also. And, you know, a lot of funding was provided to various institutions across North America to force organizations and institutions and academia to start adopting this gender neutral language, to, you know, for example, turn women's studies programs at universities into gender studies programs and erase the word woman from these departments, to force the government to adopt gender identity ideology and the language surrounding that, cis, to force all government employees to put their pronouns in their bios, all of that stuff, to force people to pretend as though they don't know how to define the word woman. The only people at risk here, the only vulnerable people, are the people who push back, and it's mostly women who are getting the brunt of that. You know, it's women like me who are being threatened with violence and murder. And, you know, I'm not getting funding from anybody. I'm doing this because it's important. I don't have the support of any institution in Canada. I don't have the support of any politician in Canada, never mind the entire freaking government. These people claim vulnerability and they claim they're at risk of violence, but they are not suffering any violence. There's no risk. You know, there's no trans genocide in Canada. You know, trans identified people are not being targeted by violence in Canada. It's just not a thing that's happening. Women are being targeted with violence when they speak out, and women are constantly at risk of violence in Canada. Still, Canada's a really safe place. I'm not comparing it to, you know, an impoverished country where women and girls are being kidnapped and trafficked and murdered constantly. But nonetheless, women in Canada still continue to suffer domestic violence, sexual assault, things like that.
And well, I think there's an idea, too, here that we're in, as with Obama, was the post-racist era, that it's a post-feminist era, that all those feminist issues have been solved. And it's not a big deal. But it's not just in Canada, too, though. I'm looking at feministcurrent.com, your magazine page, and I'm seeing stories, London, New Zealand, Taiwan, Ireland. It's not strictly a Canadian issue here.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It happened across the world all at the same time, which was around 2015, 2016 is when we started seeing it happening throughout America. Planned Parenthood started referring to women as menstruators and pregnant people because the word woman became offensive and we had to pretend as though men could menstruate and men could also get pregnant. Planned Parenthood, midwifery association started doing the same. And it, of course, started happening in the UK, also in Australia, in New Zealand. Yeah, I mean, it's happening around the world. I think that in a lot of ways, Canada has been worse because of the suppression of debate and dissent. There is dissent happening in America. There are Republicans who are pushing back, you know, in red states. They're banning puberty blockers for kids and they're banning gender identity ideology in school. There has been next to no pushback in Canada until very recently. You know, I felt like I was one of the only ones. I testified against Bill C-16 in 2017. So did Jordan Peterson. Other than that, and, you know, I was forcing the conversation to happen as best I could. I was speaking in public about this at my own risk. And the media did their very best to ignore it. So in a lot of ways, Canada is in a worse situation than countries like America and the UK.
Well, there's C-16, Bill C-10, Bill C-36. Hate seems to be the theme here. And if speaking your own mind is hate speech, then we're in trouble. And Canada seems to be not only on this issue, but on, as I mentioned off the top, the COVID issue and the Ukraine war as well. It seems no dissent will be brooked. It'll be called hate or Nazism or whatever. Megan, before we go in our last 30, 40 seconds here, can you reiterate, please, the event in Nanaimo and how people, I know that you have to keep it secret. And when Dmitry Lascaris was traveling Canada, talking about just going to Russia and speaking with Russians, it was the same thing. We had to keep it secret because of disruptions at events and cancellation and everything else. But can you give us as much information as you can for people who think they might want to take part?
Yeah, I mean, it's really crazy that we have to keep the location secret, but we do because the venues are at huge risk. Again, venue staff will get threatened with violence. They've gotten bomb threats. When I spoke at the Seattle Public Library, they got a bomb threat. And if we leak the event, we get counter protesters, and often the event has to be shut down. Attendees don't feel safe, etc. So, we will let ticket holders know of the exact location in Nanaimo the morning of the event, and we actually sold out, but we
Oh,
do have a
great.
wait list.
And
So,
that's without Eventbrite too, I guess we should mention too, as
oh,
far as
yeah.
cancellation culture goes.
That's a real good point. Yeah, we couldn't sell tickets on Eventbrite because Eventbrite shuts down women's events that are critical of gender identity ideology. The last event that I did that was organized by my friend Michelle Evans in Austin to defend women's rights, women's sex-based rights, women's spaces, Eventbrite shut down her ticketing site and banned her from Eventbrite. So we can't use Eventbrite. So we have our own ticketing site up that is at getgroupie.com/ Vancouver Island October 2023, which I know is a weird address, but I have
Can
the
you
poster.
repeat that? Get groupie?
Sure. I mean, it's probably easier if people just go to my Instagram or my Twitter account or my Substack, which is meganmurphy.ca. The link is a bit strange to read out loud, but yeah, I have the poster and the link on all of my social media accounts. So I'm on Twitter at Megan Emily or Megan E Murphy. I'm sorry. I'm on Instagram at Megan Emily Murphy. And I have the link to the ticket site on my
And
site.
that's Megan with an H M E
That's
G
correct.
H
To
A
make
N
things even more
Murphy.
confusing, MEGHAN Murphy, MURPHY.CA.
And your fellow panelists are Bryony Dixon and Janae Wright, Janae,
Janaea Wright. Yeah,
and
so
Gwen O'Mahony
yeah, the
as
event's
a.
moderated by Gwen O'Mahony, who is an actual ex-NDPer, so that's the first time that's ever happened.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on, Megan, and I certainly wish you luck at your event. It's really troubling that Canadians are deemed so brittle by their government that we can't hear critical voices on a broad array of vital issues, but there we are. Again, it's Vancouver Island Speaks Out, Gender Identity, Ideology, Women's Spaces, and Parental Rights. It's Sunday, August 1st, to be revealed later where. At 7 p.m., the doors at 6:30. Thanks again, Megan, for coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And I want to also thank Alan Castles, and that's all I've got for this week. Until the next time.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people. Bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire. Fire.
Dear listeners, as you may have heard, Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook, is blocking Canadian access to all content created by news providers, including this radio station, in response to the Online Broadcasting Act. Access to local news and information matters to everyone, and while radio stations use their airwaves to keep you informed, we also use social media to share local news, events, and initiatives, and even content about our upcoming programming. We need you to write your MP and convey your concerns. Learn more and find a letter template for your MP on our website. Thank you for your support.